Since then, 1909.
So you were in Beeville in 1909.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. How did it look? What were the roads like? The modes of transportation?
Dirt roads. Mr. J.S. Hall, the man that I worked for there, he bought him a car. He went to the factory up north and bought one of them big, great big old Franklin touring cars. The whole Franklin Dice, the headlights and the hubcaps and handles, door handles, everything was bright.
How much did it cost him?
Oh, $7,000. I forget what he paid for it. And he drove that thing all the way back from Detroit to where the factory is, back to Beeville, he and his wife, dirt roads. And I was waiting for him. President Taft. His brother owned a ranch over there in Taft, Texas. He came down here to visit his brother. Mr. Hall had me to polish that car up, and that already shining like new money. And he came down to be in the parade with the president in Corpus Christi and off the top. And he got up there, the president Taft went out there to watch those cowboy girls ride wild horses and rope cattle. All that kind of stuff.
What was this man's name, the man that had the car?
Did I tell him about driving? Yeah. Jazz Hall.
Jazz Hall?
Yeah, Sid Hall.
Sid Hall. He was from Beeville.
Yeah, he ran a clothing store there. And he also had a general store out of Clareville, 10 miles west of Beeville. And that's where I drove a freight team, hauling freight and cotton seed, everything.
Now, when you were in Beeville, did you work for the railroad?
No.
This is, you were a freightman, right? A teamster.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Driving four mule team.
Let's see. Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of Caliche Road between Beeville and Clareville.
What were the roads like when it rained, the weather?
Well, if you got to get off that Caliche, they're pretty tough.
What did you do when it rained?
Well, I got my time, we just didn't go.
You just didn't go?
You know, I was getting $20 a month straight time. That meant, don't care what kind of weather it was, he paid me straight on through $20 a month and more.
Were you married?
No, I remember 20 years old.
What were the schools like in Beeville? Did you have any experience with them?
No, I didn't have any. Well, I don't know much about the schools. Now, they had a pretty good school out of Clareville. I remember that pretty well. But all the whole streets and everything, just mud streets when it rained.
What about, how did you get around? What was your transportation in Beeville?
Well, I never hardly ever got out.
Did you have a car?
No, I didn't have anything in the way of transportation.
How many people did own cars in Beeville?
They was buying, when I lived there in 1909, there was only six cars in Beeville.
How many people lived in Beeville?
Oh, good night, I don't know, 3,000 or 4,000, or maybe more.
Six cars and...
Just six cars. Now Mr. Sid Hall's Franklin car that he bought, and then the sheriff owned one, and there's Dr. Stevens owned one, and another doctor, I forget his name, owned one that looked just like a buggy. Instead of a steering wheel, he had a stick that worked this way and had a chain drive underneath the bed of the buggy. Go back and fix the cobble wheels on the road right side. Lots of fun going on around that.
Okay, now in Beeville, like at the time still 1909, what were the farming conditions like?
They're good.
What do they farm? What kind of crop?
Cotton and maize, corn.
What else?
Broom corn. They had quite a bit of broom corn in that country.
Did they, what were their farming methods like?
Farming mules and plows. Walking plows.
Walking plow, that's that one blade?
Yeah. No, they turning, I mean, metal busters and turning plows and such stuff as that, and cultivators. Mm-hmm. They walk with new cultivators.
In Beeville at the time, was farming the main employment? I mean, everybody was farmed for themselves, or did they have a big corporation? Or
mostly all farming. The landowners had runners. I remember one farmer named Scott out there at Beeville. He had a runner on the place. He's a single man. He's a Mexican. He made 25, I forget how many acres he had in cotton, but he made 25 bales of cotton.
By himself?
By himself.
How did he bale cotton in those days? They didn't have a baler, did they?
They had rather gins.
They had
press, just like they bale it up now.
Were there any other industries in Beeville at the time?
None that I don't know of.
Farming was the main...
Farming, well, there's another man there in the bee business. He done a lot of, well, that was all he farmed, he and his son, and bees and honey. Ship honey all the way in where anybody would want to buy it. They just ordered it and he'd ship it to them.
Mm-hmm.
1909, there's a man lived across the Nueces River down there and went across a swinging bridge on Nueces River, swung across with big rope, wire rope cables, and he traded with Mr. Oliver one time. He owed him a debt. He paid him in corn. So the fellow that worked our farm had drove a 6-mule team, and I drove a 4-mule team. Mr. Oliver sent both of us one afternoon to go over across the river and stay there all night and load up the corn and bring it back the next morning. So that's what we did. And this other fellow was a big, tall, black nigger. Man, he's a good cook, too. He'd taken food along, and he did the cooking. With me and him both slept on pallets made down in bed of one of the wagons. And our mules were put in a corral out there. Next morning, one of my mules was out. But he couldn't go nowhere. He's still out in a pretty good sized corral.
Uh-huh.
And we went out and caught him and got him back in and caught him.
What were the banks like in Beeville? The banking and the stores?
Yeah, they had a bank right on the corner next to another bank and a drug store, and then Mr. Hall had his clothing store. And then right down the street next to him is another clothing store, and it was operated by a Partain dry goods company. And this old trunk here, I bought that from Partain dry goods company in August 1909. Gave him $8 for it.
Pretty old.
Yeah, but you couldn't buy one like it now.
I don't think there are any like that now. Did you yourself use the banks?
No, I didn't.
Why? I'm just curious as to why.
No, I just didn't.
In Beeville in 1909, we'll move down to a later period of time in a minute, but in Beeville in 1909, what was the main form of communication?
Well,
they had no telephones.
No telephones.
It was
telegraph wires from the railroad and Western Union lines.
How long had the lines been in Beeville? Do you know?
No, I don't know.
They had been there quite a while, though.
Yeah, they'd been there a good while, I guess. And there's two railroads in that Southern Pacific came out of Houston into Beeville, and then the San Antonio and Aransas Pass run from Corpus Christi up through Beeville on into San Antonio. And while I was working there, Mr. Hall, where President Taft's special train came through one night. As a regular train going north at 9 o'clock in Beeville, supposed been President Special was falling behind him. They seen the train coming. A whole lot of people all standing around there. Several hundred people standing around the station waiting for the train to go by, because he was supposed to stop and make a 3-minute talk from the rear of his special car. The one come up right on through. Soldiers all over it, standing in the doors and on the rear end of it, some riding the engine, the engineer and fireman. No president. A few minutes later, seen another one come and see his headlight come on through. He went on through. Well, under a little bit, seen another one coming, come up and stop. That is him. He walked out on the rear platform of his private car he was riding in. Soldiers just fell over there like ants. All around on the ground, all around him up on that platform there, and they all upside the steps and around, and they all on his engine. All they had that train well guarded. And while he was making his little 3-minute talk, there's some fella interrupted him out in the crowd there. So somebody grabbed him, taking him out of the crowd right quick.
What was the, were there any raids on, when you were in Beaver, were there any raids or bandits that ever came to that area?
Didn't hear of any.
What was the law enforcement, what were the law enforcers like?
The sheriff and the deputy, I don't know how many deputies you had, and a marshal, city marshal.
Were there a lot of, was there any crime?
Not much. Very seldomly or very much.
What, did the officers, any of the officers or the people wear pistols?
Yeah.
They carried sidearms?
Yeah.
What about the individuals in town?
No, I never did see one with a gun on.
Did you ever hear any stories about Brownsville at that time?
Oh, yeah.
What did they tell you about Brownsville in 1909?
That's when I told you I'd come down to Kingswood here in 1909. Uh-huh. I was going to go down to Brownsville. I just wanted to run around and see what the country looked like. Well, I came down to Sutton out of Beeville and caught to Missouri City. Well, it wasn't Missouri City, it was St. Louis Brownsville, Mexico Railroad. And I stayed all night at the rooming house over here in Kingsville. There's the engineer too and the fireman too rooming there. One of the engineers late one evening and packed supper. Says, young man, where are you going? I said, I'm going to go to Brownsville in the morning. He said, have you ever been there? I said, no, sir. Yeah, you better take my advice and stay out of that man's town. Said, that's a bad place down there. They'd as soon kill you as look at you. Just a young fella like you drift off in there. Said, they wear 2 guns in that town.
What about the Miller Hotel?
That's a noted place. Been shot at.
Any other places you hear of? Any other stories did you hear about Brownsville?
No, I never did hear of any of them.
Okay, you lived in Beeville from 1909 to about 1911, right? 1910.
I left there in February 1910.
Where did you go from there?
Went back home in Arkansas.
Back to Arkansas. And then you came back to...
I stayed up there then until... Well, later on in 1923, I went to work on the Kansas City Southern Railroad as a section laborer. And I was working at Winthrop, Arkansas, and they promoted me to section foreman, sent me to Louisiana. And I stayed down there several years. And when I left, that's when I went to mission down here in the valley on this road.
What did Mission look like in 1929?
It's a nice little town.
Were the road conditions the same as Beeville?
Yeah.
Dirt roads, collegiate?
Yeah. And there's Haven Green worked out of Mission. There's about 8 or 10 of them roomed and board there, the place where I was boarding at. I worked down there 2 months before I got to move my family from Louisiana. And I'd board there, and still were in an outfit car there that section foreman had. That's where I'd slip at. And the section foreman out of the leader, he got a leave of absence for 6 months. He laid off, went over in East Texas, Louisiana, now, buying goats. And during that 6 months, he shipped 8 carloads of goats into Beeville there and unloaded them, keep them around there a few days, sell them all out to those Mexicans around there. You come back and get some more goats. He'd ship them in there 2 cars at a time.
Made more money off of goats than he did off the train.
He made more money off buying and selling goats than he did off his job. So he wasn't making but $120 a month on his section.
From Mission, then you moved to Brownsville, correct?
Yeah, and this year, Haven Gang, the road gang that I was talking about, had built a highway run from Sherryland back towards the river.
Mm-hmm.
Back down that way. I don't remember how many miles it was down through there. When they completed that, well, they moved over to Romanville and started building on that highway there, going north towards Kennedy Ranch. Wasn't no highway up through there. And they got up to the line of Kennedy Ranch. They stopped. They got up there in the early part of 1929. They got there in the early part of 1930. And when he went with your man that's selling goats, went back to work, they sent me down to Brownsville to work down there. And he put the roadmaster, put me back at Alameda. I lived there about 2 months. And then I went back into Brownsville, worked on a little branch line down there. No passenger trains on it, just switch in. And I worked, did the biggest part of my work, I did it in the yard with the yard foreman. When I took that job there, I had 6 men. And it wasn't a little while till they cut me down to 2 men. And I worked there several months on that old truck with 2 men, but I've done most of my work in the yard with a yard foreman. But he's an old like man, and he wasn't too well. And roadmaster told me to stay in the yard most of the time and help him out. And we went to worked on that track right on up the old International Bridge going out into Matamoros. And done lots of work in there in the depot, Union Station. I mean, the passenger station is right close to the L.R. Dean Hotel. And it's all gone now. Nothing there, so big apartments or something, I forget what all it is built in there. Don't look like it did then.
When you were working as the track foreman, mm-hmm. right? You had 6 men and they cut you down to 2. Were these Mexican?
Yeah, they're all Mexicans. All Mexicans up in Mission, every one of them. All good men. I liked every one of them.
Did you ever have any trouble with them?
Not a bit, no worries.
Was there any discrimination other than from other people, other the big men, the big wheel?
Never did hear of it. And we was working down Mission one day, working close to a packing shed, right, track run right down the side of the packing shed. I had my gang in there doing some work on that track. And the shed man, boss man over the shed, was standing in the door while watching me and my gang. And I was speaking English to all my men. So every one of them could speak quite a bit of English and understand anything I'd tell them in English. And I was new there and didn't know any Spanish myself. I was trying to learn a little bit. If I was speaking English to them, the shed man told me, says, "Hey, foreman," said, "What are you speaking English to these men for?" He said, "Don't the railroad require you to speak Spanish?" I said, "No, sir, it does not. Don't require me to speak nothing, just my own language." He said, well, I'll tell you right now, sir, you working for us, you'd speak Spanish, or you wouldn't have a job.
What about blacks? Were there very many blacks working on the railroad?
Not down in there then.
How about in Kingsville?
Well, I finally, later on, I got to working around and got to work in the big extra gang, about 45 and 50 men gang, two assistant foremen and a timekeeper. And there's, well, I guess, 8 or 10 niggers in it. They had all good men on. They had bunk cars and they all slept in the bunk cars together, go down into the heart, all eat in there together, no trouble between them, whatever.
In any of the cities, were there any of the towns that you worked in, like Mission, Brownsville, or Amito, did they ever discriminate against the Mexicans or the blacks?
No.
They could all eat in the same places and,
yeah,
and go to the same, do the same
that's
thing?
That is on the railroad now, or anywhere else. Huh. I don't know.
Did you ever see anything like that?
No.
Any, nothing like that?
Uh-uh. Never heard of it.
You moved from, then you moved from Mission, Amito, to Brownsville.
Mm-hmm.
You worked in the railroads in Brownsville, and then we were talking about the Depression.
Mm-hmm.
You had been working there about a year.
When that Depression hit, well, they cut my job off, and I was cut off the railroad 2 years and 2 months. I didn't work a lick on the railroad. And that's when I went down on the Southmost Plantation down there, old Brownsville. Rented 30 acres of land from a man down there by the name of Tlickler. He had the whole plantation leased, and he subleased in 30 acres to me. And I had 9 acres of beans, and I forget how many acres of, and I had 2 acres of squash, some tomatoes, and come out March freeze in 1931, I believe it was, and it froze out the whole valley. You got everything that everybody had on that plantation except one man. That was the name of John Hammond. He lived in, he wasn't a man, but he was an old bachelor. He drive down south most there. He had a crop of beans back down in, on the bank of the river down in there in a, what they call a palm grove. Nothing but palm trees in there. He go all down through all the scrubby brush and everything. Had been drugged out. He farmed all down through there. Well, he just had a beautiful crop of beans. That freeze didn't even hurt him. He's the only man on that plantation that made anything. he got a big price for them beans. But before that freeze came, when I first went down there, there's a fellow by the name of Singer, lived there right close to Southmost. And he had a Singer plantation. And I rode out with him from Brownsville one day in his car. He had a one-seated car, and he said, Moncrief, said, get in, are you going home? I said, I was living there at Southmost. He said, you going home? I said, yes, sir. He said, come go down with me and look at my bean crop. He had 60 acres of them snap beans, he called them. Landed down there and drove all around. Went right down the bank of the river, come back around. That was the first sight I ever looked at in my life for beans. They just come up and had 2 leaves on. Man, it was pretty. And he went on there, and when they got ready to pick, he got wetbacks up across the river. They'd come across in little canoes and little boats and one thing and another, any way to get across. Well, the first picking he got out of there, he sold $15,000 worth of beans off that
price.
But the beans are selling, I've seen them sell as high as $6 a hamper.
When he got these wetbacks across, did he ever have any trouble with the law?
Nobody, everybody.
Oh, sure. What did he pay them?
I don't know what he paid them.
Not too much.
I bet he didn't pay them very much.
What were the farming? How did you farm?
Mules and plows.
Everybody?
Yeah.
That was the only thing around. They weren't any tractors or anything.
No. Well, I did a few tractors, not very many of them. The biggest part of the farming was done on mules and cultivators and plows like that.
What other farming? Was there other farming in Brownsville and other areas?
Oh, there's all around there farming area. Lots of cotton grow. Vegetables, there's regular vegetable farming country. Till that freeze, that stopped the whole business.
What did you do? Here you are in the middle of the Depression. Your crop froze. What did you do? How did you survive?
Well, we just...
wasn't easy, I know, but...
We just got by the best way we could. We planted some beans back. Couldn't sell them. So we had all the beans we could eat. You know, and feed them, pick them.
Did they ever trade with people who had crops that didn't... people who had crops yet they couldn't get rid of them? Did they ever trade with other farmers? You know, like corns for beans and beans for...
I don't know whether they did that or not. I bought a lot of stuff from... woman. Mexican lived up between southmost where I was living and Brownsville. He had a little store up there. I forget what his name was. My fine fella. He drove a grocery truck all over that country down there, them old dirt roads, old place. He'd come to our house and we'd trade with him. He'd pay him up. Get a little money on once in a while when somebody I'd work for would do a little work, get a house 75 cents a day.
Is that good?
That's all he'd pay. Then it came up 1933 storm, a hurricane, and hit that country through there. 120-mile wind hit the airport there at Brownsville. It wrecked it, and Boca Chica Highway, right out of Brownsville to Boca Chica, they just tore that highway all to pieces. They did it over another concrete road. Well, it was put back by the government work, and a fellow by the name of Walter Keller down there, he'd go around and investigate and see all needed help. He came to my house one day and found out I was working for certain fellow there for on the farm for 75 cents a day. And my goodness, that's all he's paying you. I said, yes. He said, what's he paying these Mexicans? He had 15 Mexicans. I said, well, his tractor drivers get 75 cents a day, and his other men are getting 50 cents a day. And he's paying me 75 cents a day. He said, you go up to Brownsville in the morning or whenever you can get up there. And go to Bill Cadbury. That's some kind of office. They go in there and tell him that I sent you in there and sign you up. And that I'm going to put you to work on that Boca Chica Highway. It's working for 40 hours a week. And I forget how much I made now. And that's what I was working for, 75 cents a day. He tried to run up there and tried to have me cut out. And this investigator that go around, see these people, see how much they're needing and everything, and what they're being paid. And this fellow by the name of Knight went up there and tried to get me cut off, put me back on the farm. And Walter Keller, the investigator, told him, says, hey, Bill Knight was his name. He said, you raised them Mexicans. Said, you've got 15 Mexicans working down there with you. So you raise their wages, I'm going to come down and get every one of them on this highway. He said, I can do it. He said, you better get back home and raise their wages. He said, I mean tomorrow. So you don't come and get every one of them.
You know if he raised the wages?
And the tractor men are getting 75 cents a day. He raised them to a dollar. And all these other men are getting 50 cents a day. He raised them to 75 cents. Thank you. still have working down in South Moses. I didn't have no kind of tools, farming tools, no stock of any kind. So when I was 38 or something, we had two tractors. And he let me have it. He told me something on the paper. They took me to my tractors and break the land. If you furnish the gasoline, I said, I'll sure do it. And that's where I broke my land. And he was paying his truck $1 a day. I planted tomatoes. I had another fellow that was set up there in Brownsville in the name of Lally. He operated a big packing shed, and he'd sell seed to the farmers around. And I went down and bought some tomato seed, plant some tomatoes, and he'd get beans from me, all that kind of stuff, and plant it. And squash seed. And this year, Walter Keller I was speaking about, I learned there's a Mexican over there on the bank of the river, had a little place over there, 2 acres. He owned plantain squash. He went to Walter Keller. Walter Keller at that time was operating a canal rush packing ship out on 14th Street, they called it, there in Brownsville, the road that went down the road south. He went to Walter Keller and told him what he'd like to do. I don't know if he'd help him get some seed. He said, I'm so and so. Yes, sir, he let him have enough squash seed to plant that 2 acre squash. So he sold $500 worth of squash over them 2 acres.
During the Depression, well, were there still religious groups, or were the churches still having a regular celebration?
Yeah, their churches seem to be pretty normal.
What religion are you? What religion?
Well, there's different kinds, Baptist, Methodist, Presbyterian, Catholic, Aaron Brown.
Do you know if those churches, you know of St. Mary's Sacred Heart Church? It might have been there when you were there. It was on the corner over on Elizabeth Street, East Elizabeth near, there's a big white house across the street from it.
I remember.
Did you ever know the lady who owned it, the brother to the church?
No, I didn't. I know very well, folks.
There was a church across the street. There's a church across the street now. Was that church there then in 1929 or 1930?
I don't remember that well enough.
Were you a religious man? Did you go to church?
Not for a while I did. Didn't have any way to go. I'm sure they're buried some way. Somebody take us.
You were telling me a story about...
Of course, after we lived in Brownsville, we could walk and go to the church.
Which church did you go to?
Methodist.
Now, where is that located? Where was it located?
I forget what street it was on. Back in the telephone office. Old telephone office, huh? But still, I don't know. Back in that close to that park. Down towards it. Southern Pacific Depot. Somewhere back down in there. And then we went up to the Baptist church, son. We just go one to the other, mostly. And my daughter lives at Lost Crescent now. She's associated with a girl of her age, Ned Presbyterian. And they're right across on the corner from the high school building. I believe that's on
Elizabeth also. It's still there.
Mm-hmm. And there's a school building right down north of that Presbyterian Church. That's where Thomas, his son of mine is here now. His first school was in that school.
Don't remember what his next school is.
And then he got out of that school, but he went over there to some part of the high school building and went to school in there. And then he finally wound up one time Not do that in Marcus, my other brother. He went over there on... Name of that up in school, back up to east of Brownsville, Colonial Heights or some...
Ebony Heights.
Yeah, Ebony Heights, something like that. And we lived at Southmost, down there on the farm. They went to school, the little school house had three teachers at the highway there. I forget the name of that school. They had three women teachers there. Ms. Reed, Ms. Knight, and Ms. Whaley. The teacher's name.
Were you ever familiar with the college that was there, that is there now at Southmost? Yes. Did you ever have any experiences with the school teachers?
No.
Were they good instructors?
Fine. You didn't have to get any trouble that I ever heard of. Seemed to me like that was a Dick Perry school or something out there that my oldest son went to there and grounded. I don't remember just exactly what the name was now.
When did you go back working on the railroad?
Well, I was 2 years and 2 months. And I was working down there Southmost. And the section foreman up there in Brownsville drove down there one day in his car. He had an old Ford car. He drove down there and brought a message to me from a division engineer here in Kingsville. And he made a report to Al Gore, way up this side of Houston. Made a report up there the next day. You were a leader foreman up there, section foreman there, all in 5 days vacation. So that, I forget what year that was now.
About 1933, yeah.
It was after that storm.
About 1934.
Yeah, I guess that would get it closer to get it. I worked there about 5 days and I came back home. About 2 weeks in, he sent me another message to go to Bay City, take up 2 yard tracks. Go up there and organize a bucket game, he called it. 15-man game. I went up there and went around the section for me, got me to get them. Went around, hired 15 men. Worked there. I had a certain length of time to take up those 2 trucks and truck all the tires up and pile them, truck all the rails and bolts and spikes and angle bars and everything out and pile them up so they'd be loaded. And I finished up the work 2 days ahead of time. I went to the roadmaster's office there one afternoon after we quit. I went in and told him, I said, "Well, Mr. Saxon, that's his name. I said, I've completed these tracks now." He said, "You through with it?" I said, "I certainly am. Finished them up this afternoon." He said, "My goodness, well," I said, "you've got 2 days yet." I said, I can't afford to lose that much money, because I allowed so much money to have them tracks taken up on. Said, you like 2 days taking it all up. Said, "I'm going to keep you here 2 days to work on the main line around here and charge it this work." Said, "Don't you charge nothing the main line, still charge it out for them working on them 2 pipes, them 2 yard tracks. So I did, went back home. I'm going home in 2 days. Got another message in to go over to someplace in the Coast Edge Castle there. Got over there to relieve another foreman over there. It just kept me jumping around that way for several months. Finally, had a big extra gang. So, Coulter was the foreman. And Mr. Ford, the division engineer, sent me another message to report to Rosario up there. That's where the gang was working then. Report up there and go to work as assistant foreman. Well, I worked on that gang a year and a half as assistant foreman, 45 cents an hour. and my board on the taxi game.
Was that good pay at that time?
Yeah.
Top?
Yeah, top pay for assistant foreman. Yeah. Regular foreman would get about $125 a month.
Straight time?
Uh-huh. No, so many hours a day. 8 to 10 hours a day. Well, I worked for him. A year and a half. And one evening after quitting time, here come a message down from the depot to the taxi gang cars. Some fella up there, the agent, the operator sent a message down there for somebody to me. Catch the train that night and go to Reeves, Louisiana, relieve a foreman over there that had a bad sick wife at Palestine Hospital. Her name was Wyndham. I went over there and worked there two weeks. Stayed over there in Louisiana 7 weeks. I didn't even see home. And finally came back home then. And I got working around. I was bid in a job down there. You run from San Benito run up by Terracitas and on up through there, on into Progresa, on around up through like that, on that little branch down there. I bid that in as a foreman. I stayed there on that road 6 months. Roadmaster came up one day, said, Moncrief, said, how long you been here on this track? I told him 6 months. Or right close 6 months. He said, listen, he said, you stay over 6 months here, he said, you'll be stuck here. He said, you go to bidding on everything that comes out on the main line, regardless of what it is. See, if you can't get something, get over this track. He said, I'd hate to, as good a foreman as you are, he said, down here on this branch and lose your seniority on the main line. He said, right now, there's buildings out on two jobs. One is Lemming, up the side of San Antonio on the SAUNG railroad. Another one's on an extra gang, 45-50 man extra gang. Where's it located at? No. Went on there and after I bid, he said, you bid on both of them. And I bid on Lemming section up there, first choice. Bid on the extra gang as second choice. And then the roadmaster came over one day and told him, Moncrief, do you think you can handle that big extra tank? I said, how big is it? He said, 45, 50 man gang, two assistant foremen and timekeeper. I said, if I can't handle it, I just swear I've never seen a railroad. And I said, where's that gang located? He's in West Dakota. I was going to 7 miles from where I was living. Yeah. I didn't even know I was working there. I went up there the next morning and took charge of it. And that's when I got on that big extra gang then. And they finally worked as all of them down that valley around there on the extra gang, building tracks and switches and moving switches and all that kind of stuff. Here and yonder. All right, was every town in that valley, from Harlingen to come up to Red Run City. That was to the town on Missouri City, I mean. And finally, I got orders to move Master Gang to Kingsville, do a lot of work there in the Kingsville Yard. I come up here and worked here about a month for that big gang, putting in tires and leveling up yard tracks, one thing or another, cutting the gang down to 10 men. So I worked for 10 men then for all 2 or 3 weeks. And here come the roadmaster one day. The Moncrief said, build your gang up to 45 men. So I'm going to move you to Turcotte down there to service track from there down to Norris. I do what? Yeah, I'm going to move you down there. So I want you to get 45 men. He said, I'll let you get them. Said, I'll see if I can find some in Harlingen. Or he sent me a whole bunch of men from Harlingen up here to Kingsville. I signed them up, gave them a job, built up my gang, moved down to Turcotte then, went to search and track down there, all down through that ranch from the north. Wasn't a sign of a highway down through there. Nowhere. Just ranch on each side. While I was working down through that area there, I had to go to his old tractor down sand. And the gophers had undermined that tractor. We had to watch the gopher holes. They'd undermine the under the ends of the tires and make it dangerous. We had section foreman had to patrol the track every day. Watch for them places. So, first thing you hear, they come road gangs in there. They had big bulldozers and one, graders and one thing and another, putting that highway up through there. From Mifflin, Norris, Armstrong, all down through there. I seen them build that road. And they dragged it up and paved it. And then they just sat there and they boiled right close to a year before they ever let anybody on it. Wouldn't let no traffic go through. There's a gate on the south and north end of it. They kept them gates left across that highway. Finally, they opened it up for the travel. That's 77 down through there now. Opened it up and got traveling over that highway. And they were built on that sand down through there. It didn't hold up. They had to go rebuild that road over.
The entire road?
Hmm?
Most of it or all of it?
The biggest part of it, where that deep sand was. Hmm. It didn't hold up good. So they rebuilt it. Now you look at a road they got through there now. That's a beautiful highway through that ranch now.
Who were the road gang? You had your gang and the road gang working about the same time.
We were working down through right. There.
Were they, did you have Mexicans again?
Yeah, I had Mexicans and about 8 or 10 niggers.
Were they all good workers?
Yeah, they were fine workers. I had no trouble with them.
What about the road gangs? Were they Mexican also?
Yeah.
I guess everybody was Mexican.
Sure is. They led by the labor in that country. Down in there was Mexican labor.
You were talking that you worked in Westlico, and you were telling me how Westlico got its name.
Yeah, W.E. Stewart Land Company.
Who was W.E. Stewart?
He was a land agent. He sold that land around there. And he sold the town site of Westlico there. Mm-hmm. And that name Westlico, W.E.S. L.A.C.O. Westlico, W. Stewart Land Company. That's where the Westlico got its name.
We were talking just this past day, couple of days was Mayo de Cinco. What did the Mexicans do when it was Mayo de Cinco? In your gang?
Well, take that day. That day belonged to them.
Were they wetbacks or were they Mexican American citizens?
Well, I had a few wetbacks in the gang. They nobody bought them. No.
Did they just
nearly all of them, nearly everything I had, lived in Arlington, Brownsville, mm-hmm. around different places like that. But every Saturday evening, my timekeeper had to have him close to a week for a gang pass for so many Mexicans. From where I was working down to Brownsville, and a train going south late in the afternoon, pick up everybody going down to Arlington. They'd ride by the place to Arlington and get up, on in, and anybody going to Brownsville, the man living in Brownsville, one of them would carry that place, it was in his name. Coming back in Sunday night, they'd go home every Saturday night, coming back Sunday night, check every one of them through on that place, back from my gang.
What about do the Negroes have a holiday, any special holidays?
Yeah, back then, well, on the 19th of June was a Nigger Day. That's right, you could have a Nigger in the gang. 19th of June, you'd go. If you had a whole gang of them, they took off.
How were the foremen? How do they feel towards it? Did they accept it? Did they?
Yeah, they
not much they could do about it.
Try to do anything about it. Well, then I left it. Finally, bit off that extra gang. Went to Mike Fadden up this side of Victoria. At Mike Fadden Ranch up there. And I left there and Well, then, one time I had all Mexicans there. Shucks. Cinco Mayo came along. Nobody on the gang but me. I was off too.
Did they, what did your work schedule consist of? You got up in the morning about what time?
Oh, we'd go to work at 7 o'clock.
And then you would work till, you would work till 8 o'clock that night?
We work 8 hours then.
Did y'all have a lunch break?
Yeah, we had hours for lunch. We all carried lunches on a section. That big extra gang, we load everything at noon. Had a dining car and a cook and a cook kitchen car on the gang. I thought of it, I've got your picture. I learned to show it to you. 14 cars in my gang. I had a kitchen car and a commissary car, two dining cars, and all the bunk cars, and two cars, gasoline cars, all that kind of stuff. It looked like a young train.
How were the doctors in those days, in 1934, when you started working with the railroads? Were there good doctors?
Yeah, they seemed to be pretty good doctors. They had a company doctor up at Mission named Caldwell. And then they had another, I forget what his name was. And then they had a conductor that owned a drugstore, a Wake drugstore. He was a conductor on the railroad. And one day I was working on the Mission Yard, and something bit me on the back of the neck. I reached up and done that with a little white spider. Man, it hurt. And I was working right there in the yard right close to the depot. I told him, you know, I said, sure, that wasn't so bad. I'm going up to Dr. Caldwell's office to see if I can get him to give me something to put on the back of my neck. I could feel it. It was burning and hurting. I could tell it was swelling. I went in his office there. He wanted to know where it was from. I told him what had happened. He said, what kind of a spider was it? I was a little bit of a white-looking spider, almost completely white. He said, very pardon. He said, I don't know what you're talking about. So he put something on my neck and put a bandage over it. Give me something then to keep on it. Take the bandage off, put a new bandage on, go through it all right. This other doctor's name was Stevens, I believe his name was. I forget what it was.
Was there a man named Cole, Dr. Cole?
And Dr. Cole, he was in Brownsville. His office is up over the First National Bank. No, the Merchant National Bank had closed during the Depression. His office was up over there. He was a fine doctor. He was a company doctor. Working on that little branch I told you out of Brownsville down to Salamos. They cut the gang down to two men. One of them was named Pena. The other one was Trinity Dad. I'm not sure what it was now. Anyway, Pena, the fire, Pena, told me one day, he said, Mr. Munger, said, I'd like to lay off tomorrow. You don't mind? Said, I want to get married. I said, get married? I said, man or wife? I said, I thought you was already married. That's 5 children. He laid off. Next day he come back to work. Said, well, Mr. Pontrieff, I'm married now. Good old boys. Sure did like all them old boys.
Did they respect you? Were they polite? And
you bet your life.
They never caused any, never had any fights among them?
No, sure no.
What about, now the year is about 35, 36 maybe? And what were the forms of communication now? There was the railroad, telegraph,
Yeah.
And
Western Union.
Right, and then the telephone.
Uh-huh.
When did you first use the telephone? We were talking about that one time.
But the first telephone that we ever had to use of our own in our house was up in McFadden. 1945 or 1946, somewhere along there. Wasn't many of us when we moved there. Nobody had a telephone. But I had a company telephone in the house. Couldn't nobody use it but me. Talked to the railroad, the officials here in Kingsville. But later on, 1945, I believe it was, some telephone company came out there and put telephones in everybody's house that wanted one. That's when we got our first telephone. We kept telephone in long as we lived there. We moved from there to here, this place. And I bought this place in 1955, in December 1955, and tried to rent it for 2 or 3 years. Couldn't do no good at it. Finally, Bishop come up with a bid, and I bid on that. I told my wife, I said, I'm going to bid on Bishop. We'll move to Kingsville and live in our own house. We've been living here 15 years. We installed a telephone here. I'd put up a deposit of $20. Well, for a certain length of time, phone company sent that $20 deposit back to me. Now I put up gas meter deposit, light meter deposit, water meter deposit, all that kind of stuff. I still got them.
How do you feel, you know, living back way back then in 1909 in Texas, and now you're still living, it's 1973. How do you feel about seeing it grow so much?
Oh, man. You just can't imagine how it has grown so much. I can't ever begin to tell you how much it has improved in every way. Railroads, highways, farming, and everything else. Just been amazing how such changes have been made since 1929 when I came here, or since 1909 when I lived in Beeville. Dirt roads all over that country. Now there's highways everywhere.
The cars, I mean,
yeah,
must have been cars,
good night.
It must have been something to see you were talking about that man that had the little car that looked like a little box with a little stick handle.
Yeah.
And as compared to the cars that
were in the house. It looked like a buggy, only he set up for no steering wheel on it. It had a steering column down here, but it had a stick run out here, and he worked that and got his car with that. And underneath there, some way, I don't know how to fix it, same drive back to the rear end, axle back there on the cogwheel.
Just like a motorbike. So.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It must have been something, though, to see those cars, and now to look at the cars we have today.
They did. Look what an improvement over the cars. What it was when Mr. Hall bought that big old Franklin car. I would get how many $1,000 he'd give for that thing.